ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Yeah.
by whose merciful samsrayat by strength Drupada Deham in the palace of King Drupada. Upadatanam, all those assembled. Rajyam of the princes. Swayambaramukhe on the occasion of the selection of the bridegroom. Smaradhuravadhanam, all rusty in thought. Teja, power. Paritam, vanquished. Kalu, as it were. Maya, by me. Abhihata, pierced. Cha, also. Matsya, the fish carter. Saji Kritena, by equipping the bow. Danusha, by that bow also. Adhikata, gained. Cha, also. Krishna, Draupadi. Translation. Only by his merciful strength was I able to vanquish all the lusty princes assembled at the palace of King Drupada for the selection of the bridegroom. With my bow and arrow, I could pierce the fish target and thereby gain the hand of Draupadi. Purport. Draupadi was the most beautiful daughter of King Drupada. And when she was a young girl, almost all the princes desired her hand. But Drupada Maharaj decided to hand over his daughter to Arjuna only, and therefore contrived a particular way. There was a fish hanging on the inner roof of the house under the protection of a wheel. The condition was that, out of the princely order, one must be able to pierce the fish's eyes through the wheel of protection, and no one would be allowed to look up at the target. On the ground there was a water pot in which the target and wheel were reflected, and one had to fix his aim towards the target by looking at the trembling water in the pot. Maharaj Drupada knew well that only Arjuna, or alternately Karna, could successfully carry out the plan. But still he wanted to hand his daughter to Arjuna. And then the assembly of the princely order, when Drishtadyumna, the brother of Draupadi, introduced all the princes to his grown-up sister, Karna was also present in the game. But Draupadi tactfully avoided Karna as the rival of Arjuna, and she expressed her desires to her brother Drishtadyumna that she was unable to accept anyone who was less than a Kshatriya. Karna was known as the son of a carpenter, a Shudra. So Draupadi avoided Karna by this plea. When Arjuna, in the dress of a poor Brahmana, pierced the difficult target, everyone was astonished. And all of them, especially Karna, offered a stiff fight to Arjuna. But as usual, by the grace of Lord Krishna, he was able to emerge very successful in the princely fight, and thus gain the valuable hand of Krishna, or Draupadi. Arjuna was lamentingly remembering the incident in the absence of the Lord, by whose strength only he was so powerful. So this is a very important principle. This point is being made. This particular verse is that our strength, our energy, our ability, whatever is happening, that is happening by the grace of the Lord. So we've heard this so many times. You know, it's like we're not this body. We've heard it, you know. And many times there's the been there, done that. You know, hey, I go to MIHE, I'm doing Bhakti Nipah, so this one. But the thing is that's the verbal concept. So that, yes, generally any new devotee who has a little bit of memory, a little bit of intelligence and applies himself will catch this quickly, early in the game. You know, it's kind of obvious after a while. I mean, the devotees have very good examples and reasons to explain this, and it makes sense. That's where we're all sitting here. But then we have to watch, are we leaving it at that? Okay, now let's find some new piece of information. Right? Because Krishna consciousness is all about getting this newer and newer information. We have chanting Hare Krishna, yes, that's a nice thing, that's pleasant, sweet. Then we have our preaching where we get other, we deliver this information to others, and we can deliver it because we have received so much. But then there is the element of application. Is that a principle always applies. And that is what is difficult. Okay, in the class, okay, I've heard I'm not this body. I read it here, all Prabhupada again says I'm not this body. Okay, I've heard that, I remember it. But the point is do we remember it? Because at every time of the day, in all times, places, and circumstances, we're applying it. That's remembrance. Right? In the yoga process, you have the principle called that we're dhyana, that we're meditating, we're focusing on the Lord. So this means it's not that we did it for a second. That's Prabhupada's point about all these yogis and all those kind of things. Is that they go to the yoga studio or in their house and they sit and for 20 minutes they're very serious and very sober and they do yoga. And they figure, yes, I am a yogi. But one is counted in a status in life by what it is that you prominently do. Right? Just because someone sings a kirtan doesn't make them a musician. Right? A musician is someone who, that is what they do is a major part of their life, is music. Right? Or the husband takes out the garbage. Right? So now is he a garbage man? No. The guys who are on the back of the truck, who, you know, drive around all day picking up garbage, they're garbage men. Because it's what you do is a prominent thing. So if you do yoga for 20 minutes, you're not called a yogi. So in the same way is if you're not remembering all day, then you're not on the platform of remembrance. Right? So if we're not remembering the principle, we're not this body, all day, or a major part of the day, you know, it's significant in our life, then we can't say that we know the point. We've heard it, we've memorized it, we can parrot it, but do we live it? When we live it, we say we know it. Right? This is a problem in English, is that you have basically one word, you know, or you understand. But there's no difference. To know or understand means that you know the dictionary definitions of the words at best. You can put them together and understand their application from the sentence. So basically, literally, you understand what is meant. Right? Or you might even understand the physical connection. Okay, I'm not this body, so I am the soul, so I'm the body, yes. It's one is matter, one is spirit. I can relate with that. So that's taking it to a more practical. But you know, we have the word realization, but realization is synonymous with, in English, realization generally is just an extension of knowledge. You have a little bit deeper understanding. It doesn't necessarily mean application. It does not necessarily mean value. It doesn't mean how you're going to live your life. It's not meaning that. But in Sanskrit, realization means you have this understanding, you live your life according to it, because you're always remembering it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is one of those points. We've heard it, we know it, okay, by Krishna's mercy. But the thing is that's good, that we recognize that, that makes us suras, makes us devotees. But we should actually be able to apply that in the life. Everything we're doing is only by Krishna's mercy. You know, we go out, when this class is over, we'll open the door, we'll walk down the stairs without thinking. Let's come back in another 20, 30 years. Then you'll see what it means to walk down a set of stairs. You know, then you realize each step is a challenge. Each, you know, that railing on the side, it's, you know, God's blessings, you know, like that. But no one else is on the stairs, and that's great, you know. Then you've got 5 minutes to get up the stairs and no one's going to bother you. So, in other words, whatever we do, it's only Krishna's energy. So, every living entity functions on this principle. But for Arjuna, because he was a personal associate, it carried more. It carries into the amazing. Because then it's the Lord's pastime. The Lord is unlimited. The Lord is amazing. So therefore his associates, they are amazing. So that is being brought out here. So he can see that. So we have a principle that is there. The material energy is flowing to the material energy. That's what movement means, that one aspect of material energy is cooperatively moving towards another that it matches with. Right? It means you can't... Does that make some sense? It has to match. You want to pick up a ball and throw it. You say, what's the big deal? But the ball can only be projected by something. The ball isn't sitting there next to it, it's a bat laying on the ground. Nothing's happening. It requires some hands, some arms, some legs, right? Some movement, and then it goes. So the energy, so all the elements are there. You're sitting there, the bat's sitting there, the ball's sitting there, the field is sitting there, but nothing's happening because there's no movement of energy. Then the Lord's material energy then moves through the arm, you know, through the bat, hits the ball moves through the air, and then is received by the earth. Right? So that energy then goes back into the material energy. Do we understand it? Does that make some sense or something? So everything is functioning like that. There's nothing that's not happening where it's a movement of energy. Dead matter is not moving. So everything that we're dealing with, everything we see is dead matter. So how will it move? Right? So there must be the presence of the soul, there must be the presence of the super soul. And that means then the Lord's energy is coming through the living entity, then through the dead matter, and going back to the Lord. The complete cycle. The Lord's not there, it doesn't happen. You put electricity at one end of a wire and there's nothing at the other end, the electricity doesn't go through the wire. As soon as something's there, it goes. So that's the point, is that it's coming from Krishna, going back to Krishna. That's just how it's working. You don't understand it, you're bound by it. You understand it, you're freed from it. You understand that it's Krishna, and therefore you are an instrument in the movement of this energy, then you get bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Done without knowledge, that's called karma. The energy is moving through you, you think you're the doer. That's called karma. So because you think you're the doer, therefore the result is, therefore put before you for your, how do you say, interaction. So that's why then there's karmic reaction, because you claimed it, so okay, here it is. Jnana means that you perform the activity with knowledge. Let's say jnana yoga. Jnana means you don't do the activity, you sit around and contemplate, yes, the energy is moving, this, that, but you're not doing anything. Because, yeah, so does that make sense? You understand his devotion is Krishna, so Krishna's there, but then how will you express that? Right? Just like we will criticize the jnanis because they contemplate but don't act. So in the same way, is we may say, yes, Krishna, devotion, but unless we act, how will we say it's bhakti? How it's complete? Jnana is not complete without activity. Right? It gets no result. So therefore also, the bhakti, there must be activity. How do you express it? If you're so absorbed that, yes, in the mind you can say, well, even in the mind, that's bhakti. Yes, but then that should be prominent, as we discussed in the beginning. That's what you do all day. You simply think about Krishna, contemplate Krishna, and that's all you think about. Then you can say, yes, then you're performing devotion on the platform of meditation. That's called bhava bhakti. So generally that doesn't happen at the lower stages and being prominent. So action must be there. So that combination of having the understanding and applying it, that gets you the result. On the material platform, the metaphysics will give you liberation. On the spiritual platform, it will give you devotion. And on the physical platform, it will give you results. The physical result. Does that make sense? You perform the activity, you'll get the physical result. You understand the metaphysics of it, that activity will give you liberation. You're doing that to please Krishna, that activity will give you bhakti. Does that make sense? So here he's pointing out, by the merciful strength of the Lord, then he was able to do all this. It's an impossibility, but he could do it. So this is the wonderfulness of it. So now, so that's one bridge, is understanding that whatever is going on, this is just the movement of the Lord's mercy, his strength, his beauty, his fame, his knowledge. Is renunciation. Whatever it is that you're dealing with, you can only deal with these six. You don't have a seventh opulence. Right? God doesn't have it. We're not going to have it. Right? It's like, so this is what you can deal with. And this is what's important. We don't deal with anything outside of this because it's not important. So, therefore, these opulences, we will deal with them. But now, if we understand that the opulence is coming from Krishna, going back to Krishna, then we're only an instrument. That's the position of the jiva. Then we're set nicely. But if we think, I'm doing it, then it becomes mixed. Right? This is Misra Bhakti. Then it becomes mixed with, I am the doer, I am the controller. That makes sense? So then you have to get involved in the result. You know, you have to get involved in the reaction. So that's why we should know what we're doing. So that's one bridge. Another bridge is, okay, that's the philosophy. Nice. Now I go back to my life. But now we look at this, and we look and here, and we'll just, you know, these things, oh, it's mine. I'm going to mention a bunch of things here from the verse. And if here, it'll be great. Draupadi was the most beautiful daughter of King Drupada. When she was a young girl, okay, that's the second point, young girl, all the princes desired her hand. Third point. Okay, Drupada tried to hand over his daughter Arjuna only. Right? That's a point. Therefore contrived to keep in their way. Right? Then it goes on to what is there. Okay. Draupadi tactfully avoided Karna as the rival of Arjuna. Right. She expressed her desires to her brother, Mr. Duna. That's another point. She was unable to accept anyone less than a Kshatriya. That's a real desert one. Karna was known as the son of a carpenter, a Shudra. Okay, then after that, then Karna offered a stiff fight. Okay, bad sport. And thus he was able to gain the valuable hand of Krishna, of Draupadi. Okay, we read that one, okay, no problem. But now, if we apply this in our life, immediately this whole purport would just be Maya. It would all be Maya. Why, what's the big, why beautiful girl? What is this whole thing? Why girls are beautiful? You know, all, everyone wants her hand. Why her hand? Why not, why it's expressed like that? You know, here, only wanted to give to Arjuna. Well, where's her free will? You know, what I'm saying? We can go on and on and on. And these are things I hear coming out of the mouths of devotees today. If we apply this in this community now, brought this up before the Grihastha Council, most of this would be thrown out as Maya. And we're studying it right here as topmost philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a serious disparity in our life. Serious. That means the philosophy and the culture have no connection. And in fact, the very culture that we're studying here and going, nice, nice, and we say apply it in your life, then we'll say, what? That doesn't work. It doesn't apply, right? Girls aren't beautiful today. Princes don't, boys don't want to marry them, right? Like that, fathers don't want to give them away to boys. It doesn't work these days, right? It doesn't happen like that. Boys, the other boy that didn't get the girl doesn't get it, doesn't get jealous. You know, like, come on, we're in an improved age. We're a modern man. So this is the other aspect. Many times devotees ask, where do I get all these things in the culture? It's right here. There's about 10 cultural points right here. Very fine. Why the hand? Why not you just gave the daughter? Why the hand? Because the hand signifies a connection. You hold a hand as a connection. Boy, it's not so important. The hand is first step to get somewhere else. Girl, it's important. Hand means a connection. So therefore, the hand. We didn't say, and so therefore, Drupad Maharaj desired to give the head of his daughter to a qualified prince. No, it's the hand. Because the hand is the connection. The hand is where the interaction is. Right? Anything that's going to connect the two is basically going to happen through the hand. Any physical connection is going to be connected by the hand in some way. You serve prasad with the hand, you touch someone with the hand, you cook with the hand, you give with the hand. Everything's hand. So it's very significant. Right? So when you say, give the hand, then immediately it's seen as something poetic, very nice and that. If he says he wanted to give his daughter in marriage to Arjuna, okay, that's the fact. That's the tattva. But he says he wanted to give the hand of his daughter to Arjuna, then immediately, oh, it's poetic, it has romantic aspect. You see? So, this is our culture. This is available for us. We can talk like this. We can think like this. It's not Maya. Why? Because Krishna gave it like this. Right? Wedding, the hands of the boy and girl tied. Who gave that rule? Who made that ritual? Krishna. So that's the method. Right? He wanted this boy to this. So therefore, in some way or another, he finds some way to make it happen. Right? The father sees, okay, this boy is qualified. And the daughter's will, he'll make some way to make that happen. Okay? Use your intelligence. So it's the same principle. Maybe we're not getting out, you know, bows and arrows and wheels and fishes and all that stuff like that. I mean, I haven't noticed down to the down in the park and the wheels up on the top and bows and everything. And so, does it make sense? So it's a matter of, that's how it works. The father sees someone qualified and then figures out how to make it happen. It's got to happen. The girl herself, her father didn't say, no, Karna can't. No. This is a Swayambhara. Swayambhara is open. As long as they come from some kind of nice background that they can get in the gate, then they're okay. She said, I'll only accept someone from nobility, minimum. Right? If she had said, I'll only accept the Kshatriya, Arjuna would have had a problem. But she said, I won't accept anything below a Kshatriya. So then, that was her. So she had already, accepted that. Because she heard about his qualities, this, that, and she decided also, this is the person. Then the father works out how to make it happen. This is another example of just the practicality of how the family members help make these connections. This is a little bit more indirect. This has been more directly explained in other chapters. Okay, then he does something that is qualified of that person and is of what standard they want. Right? They're not picking something that can't be done. They're not picking something that's outside of their field, out of their qualification. You know? And it's proper. Kshatriya codes here. Then he received. Then Drishtadyumna, the brother of Draupadi, announced all the princes to his grown-up sister. So this is also a formality. Then she's just going to pick by the body. You just go out there and look. No, they're all, each one painstakingly is introduced. So if there's 1,000 princes there, everybody sits there while 1,000 princes are introduced. Each one is introduced, their lineage, this and that, coming from this dynasty. So then everybody, one, appreciates the quality of the person, that is the individual. Two, you appreciate the quality of the assembly. Everybody in the assembly will feel, yes, this is the proper assembly for this. We don't have any unqualified people here. Right? Another, how do you say, politically incorrect situation. Right? Only qualified people do the job that they're supposed to, the task they're set to do. Right? It's not by just desire, you have to have the qualification. Another practical application. Right? These are kings. You're not going to settle for something that doesn't work. They have a qualification, you're there. If you don't have a qualification, you're not there. So then they go. And so then he announces. She's not going to ask. She's going to be told. Right? So these are things here also that are, one has to know. Now you know what it is. The girls go up and ask? No. If they can ask, they can ask brother or someone close. They'll inquire. They'll find out. They don't find out directly. This is a Swayambhara. So this is called Prajapati marriage. Prajapati means the girl chooses the boy. Right? But now we see how she's choosing the boy. She's not just walking up to the guy and going, hi, my name is, you know. See, her father's arranging it, her brother's arranging it, like that. She'll choose. She gets to see, but it's there. So this is the element. This is protection. It appears as service. Why he should do it? She's a girl. He's superior. He's a boy. She should work it out herself. No, but then where's rasa? Where's interaction? So rasa is based on service. Rasa is based on doing something for somebody. The Kshatriya, his service to the community is protecting. So protection is a service. There's no one in the society that's not serving. All that there is in the Varnashram system is a hierarchy of importance of service. Does that make sense? But because we think we're God, therefore we see it backwards. We see it who's in charge, who's the authority. No, it's preaching is more important than administration, which is more important than economics, which is more important than arts. Does that make sense? They're all important. You got to have them. Otherwise, you don't have a society. But if two of them come to one place at one time, you have to choose. Okay, I got a preaching opportunity right now to this person. Or I could go and finish the accounts. I should preach. I can go finish the accounts at another time. Right? If it's a matter of, okay, I have to set things up so that everything will run smoothly in the community, or I have a chance to do some economic thing, you have to make sure that the community is stable. Otherwise, economics will fail. Right? Economics are only prosperous if they're not lost. It's unstable. You lose them. Therefore, administration is more important than economics. Economics are more important than the art. You're going to do the art, does it give some result? What's the use? Therefore, you see the Vedic arts, all of them give result. Right? But setting up the economics is more important than the art. Right? The guy has to go out and buy the materials to sell, then you can apply the art of salesmanship. Right? Does that make sense? So you see, there's a hierarchy of what is there. So it's actually what service you are rendering to the community. Service of knowledge, service of protection, service of economics, or service of assistance. Right? But for ego, then we say, okay, the service of assistance, that service and everything else is in charge. Makes people feel good. Because a lot of people cannot function unless they feel they're in charge. They cannot function. Unfortunate, but true. We've been in material so long, we're so conditioned to that. It's not seen that this is my service. So if it's a service, is it needed? Right? I can say, yes, I need it. No, but you need it. Does anybody else need it? When someone else needs it, then it's a service. Right? There has to be a cooperation. You only need it, no one else needs it, that's not a service. You need it, they need it, that's a service. So that's how the Vedic would see if it's useful. Otherwise, nowadays, someone wants, that's all it takes. At the same time, we don't like spoiled kids. You know, they want. Okay, we try to give because the principle in society is what you want is what you should do. But the Vedic principles, what you want is what you should do, but there should be other factors already discussed before you decide that. Is it what the scriptures say? Is it according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra? Is it what the Acharyas have done? Is it what is there in the tradition? Is there an example of it? Then from that choose, yes, I want to do this. You know, just like we have three subjects, which one do you want? Then you choose. You can't say, no, I want that over there. No, we're giving you these three choices. So the Vedic, you're doing what you want. You're free. You want to follow the, you want to do, have the status of a Brahmin, great. Then follow the lifestyle and the occupation, no problem. But if you want the status of a Brahmin, but you're going to follow the occupation of someone else, then at some point, the king will come to you and say, hey, one or the other. Right? Which are you? Then you choose, then you take that status. So you're free to choose, but the choices are set by God, not by us. If it's not, then it's spoiled. Spoiled means one-sided. So spoiled is not restricted to kids. Right? There's always a discussion going on. Are kids small, you know, immature adults, or are adults just more supposedly mature kids? Right? You know, this is always a social, the psychologists are always trying to work this one out. So on these things that one has to see. So she then did this. This is her choice. She did this and others do this for her. That's called protection of women. It's not, oh, you're serving women. No, it's protection, it's the duty. Okay, Vaishyas and Shudras are less important than the Kshatriyas. So we described before, the Shudra occupation can only function if the Kshatriya and Vaishya occupations are in place. Otherwise, there is no art, right? It means that you look at any civilization, unless there's prosperity, there is no art. Right? Renaissance, there's prosperity. So there's so much art. Why is that? Because the states were strong. And why was that? Because religion was strong. Does that make sense? It's automatic. The church became strong and it took over the continent. Because of that, the states were strong. Because of that, then economics was strong. Because of that, then arts. So that's why then it's said that they're less important. The individual person is not less important, but the status is less important. Right? So in the social interaction, you combine the dealing with the individual and their status. This is important. Their status may be lower, but they as an individual you have to deal with properly. The king goes out and talks to a Shudra on the street, he will deal properly according to his age and his position. If he's elderly, he'll be very respectful. But it doesn't mean that he is the Kshatriya is not telling him what to do. Even though he may be young, the Shudra may be old, but the king will tell the Shudra what to do. But he will tell him respectfully. So this idea is that I'm in charge, I'm superior, therefore I treat everyone else badly. That's a malecha concept. It's not human. Okay. So that's why all of these things must be balanced. Otherwise, as we see, we've made a mess out of what we call varnashram. You know, we talk about it, we don't see it. Some individuals do something, but otherwise, we don't hear it. We don't see it. Why? Because we don't balance it. We don't see the actual, that varnashram is a culture of service. It's a culture of relationship. And that's based on the philosophy. It can't be separated from the philosophy. Those who do take up it very strongly, many times they divorce it from the philosophy. And those who reject it also divorce it from the philosophy. So we see that there's no dynamic connection between the philosophy, the culture, and the art of application. Right? And so that's there in, so that has to be, one should seek after that. What is this? How to make it work? What is the connection? Right? So this is the, that's why Prabhupada said, blind man, lame man. Right? Indians have a thing, but they don't know, they don't apply. The West has so much, you know, enthusiasm, but doesn't know where to go. That combination, that dynamism of the West and wanting to know and have to do everything, you know, right and all that, combine that with the tradition and culture and philosophy, then bingo, you have something nice. Short of that combination, we don't see it. We just don't see it. We have Indians going to the West becoming westernized, you know. Or, you know, different combinations. But we don't see it happen. Now when you combine the two, then it works. And son of a carpenter. Interesting to note, because sometimes you know this son of a charioteer. So I was thinking, why would he be called the son of a carpenter when he's always known as suttas are known as charioteers? Then it struck me that a good charioteer should know how to make a chariot. Right? Otherwise, you're going along down the road, your chariot breaks, you can't just pull over at the local gas station to get a fix your wheel. You know? So you have to know how to make it. Yeah. So like this, there's so many different ways one can approach. Is that this is the way it is. Girls are beautiful, they like to be beautiful. So now you have to teach them how to be beautiful for Krishna. Then there's no problem with being beautiful. Because they are and they will be. But it's just a matter of who you want to be beautiful for. Boys are going to want to marry girls. That's fine. But what is the method? Here's the method. The family arranges it. You know, you don't have the local Tagore Bush arrangement. You know, so like this, these things are there. So this is the problem. We'll take, oh, looking nice is Maya. So therefore, nobody tries to deal with that. Though at the same time, they are dealing with it. You know, that's the thing. And it'll be, it's called Maya, but it finds weird Western ways to pop out. You know what I'm saying? We'll say, we don't care about this, we're devotees. But very few women will dress badly. You know, oh, it's all Maya, but we see that there's quite a variety of saris. Bangles, this, that. Maybe it's Maya we don't wear, but we have it. Or, okay, in the temple we don't, but when we have to go out, we have a job, we work, then they don't just put on an equally frumpy looking outfit like they dress as a devotee. No, they try to be a little bit up to date and look just like the karmis dress. Whatever is happening in that field, that's the way they dress. I've seen it myself. Girl goes out of the temple in her sari, like that, goes down to the bus stop. She looks around, always looking, kind of hides behind the bus stop. Out comes the compact, on goes the makeup, this, that, sorry comes off the head, this, that. All this is all happening, waiting for the bus to come. You know, and the karmis is normal, and they're hiding behind someone so no one in the temple can see. They don't expect that someone's, you know, on the second floor can see him out there. And then come back to the temple, oh yeah, it's all mine. So it's okay if it's preaching, if that connection's made, but is that the only connection? Right? We want the result. Okay, if I dress up like this, the karmis give me money. Right? And I'm not preaching, I'm doing whatever it is I'm doing, so that's there. But when I come home, then I dress like a slob. Why? Because there's nothing that I need to get from anybody. I don't need to please my husband, because that's mine. So therefore, I only dress up for the karmis. So then this principle is that you can't get around looking good. It's just a matter of who you're going to look good for. Krishna, husband, devotees, you know, it's proper according to culture, therefore pleasing Guru Sadhu Shastra. Some way it has to be engaged until you go beyond it. Until it's liberated, it is there. One has to deal with it at some level. So one has to find what is that level, what is the minimum level to deal with it. So, and how is it connected to Krishna? At what level? Some level is connected. I have more desire, it'll be connected to more the Varanashram. I have less desire, it'll be connected to the preaching, to the deity worship. Right, we're going to the deity. Like, deity likes ugly looking girls. Yeah? That's why the gopis went, you know, one earring on here and the other one they put on their ankle and they put the bottoms off on the top and they thought, it's all Maya to look good, you know. So Krishna likes the girls to look a little frumpy, yeah. So that's why they that's right. Krishna went like that. So that's the principle, is that one has to see, is recognize what is actually going on and make sure it's going on in the most connected Krishna conscious way possible. Otherwise, it is going on. No one should fool themselves if all the stuff going on in this purport is not going on. There are girls that are beautiful. There's one, so always one that's considered more prominent in the community. And all the boys are after her. I remember I was reading one article. A teenage girl was saying, 90% of the boys are running after 5% of the girls and saying, this is wrong. You know? So it's going on. One girl, nobody, thousands of princes. There wasn't a house on the planet that wasn't represented. I don't mean fashion house, I mean nobility here. Yes, and here from the, you know, Christian Dior is the CEO. No, it wasn't like that, it was kings. So every house was represented. So one girl, thousands of princes. It's been going on since time immemorial. We have it here in our own community. There's always one girl that's prominent for, you know, this year and like this. It's always there. And all the boys are running after that girl. Right? So that's there. But we ignore that. No, it's not going on. It is going on. So the thing is because it's not going on in our mind, therefore it's going on in the way that the Malechas and Yavanas do it. It's not going on in the way that the Bhagavatam says. So that's the point. Because we, all this culture is Maya, this and that, therefore our culture is Maya. It's all Maya, therefore we live with Maya, our method is Maya, what we do is Maya, it's Maya. And when we go to the temple, we chant our rounds, and then we're Krishna conscious. But when we're not in the temple, we're not chanting our rounds, or cooking for the deities, or putting the west, or putting to sleep, or doing an artik, or reading a Bhagavatam, technically, we're in Maya. Think about it. You know, think about it. You know, why is the vase with the dried, nicely dried flowers sitting in the little quarter round, table in the corner of the landing of the stairs? Why? Why do we have a need for aesthetics? Okay. But is that need for that aesthetic being done through Krishna? Or is it just that I have this aesthetic need, so I bring my house up to that standard? If I had a lower standard, it'd be there. If I had a higher standard, it'd be there. But where does Krishna come into the picture? Am I somehow or another doing this because it's Krishna's house? Two, why the quarter round, little half table with the colored vase and the dried flowers? Why that? Seen it in any shastra somewhere? Draupadi had one in the corner of her landing of the stairs. No, it's because that's what we've grown up with. That's what we know. No problem with it. But what I'm saying is by default, whatever we do is whatever we've grown up with. What our mother and father did, what we chose from our association, what we liked. You know, the curtains, why is it like that? Where did we get it from? The candle, where is it from? India, they use lamps. So, you know what I'm saying? My point is just by default, we will live according to our normal mundane karma. And then what we see as avenues of Krishna consciousness, we'll engage those. Japa is definitely Krishna conscious, right? Like that. Reading Prabhupada's books, like this, is Krishna conscious. Then going to the temple, seeing the deities, the kirtan, prasad, doing some other practical service, for the temple and the preaching. But outside of that, how are we going to deal with our cloth, get in and out of the car, put on our shoes, sit down, stand up? What we decide we're going to sit down on or what we're going to stand up in, all that's just previous karma. Right? If we think about it. So what we're saying is Arjuna was able to see down to this level, right? Like Krishna in his life, right? You read all these things. Are Yudhishthira after this is going to say, yes, Krishna, our position, our wives, our wealth, our influence, our beauty, our everything, that's all by the Lord's mercy, right? The Bodhi of simply say, yes, by the Lord's mercy, I distributed this many books, or by the Lord's mercy, then we were able to be Krishna. But you ever say, by the Lord's mercy, we were able to do this or that, or I cooked nicely, or we had nice guests, or I was able to get my daughter married, we found a nice boy, or... Sometimes, but a lot of times not. So this is the point. These are the devotees. They're grihasthas. Why grihasthas are picked? We could have done this whole Bhagavatam with Narayan Rishi. You know, other stages like that, four Kumaras. They don't even have clothes. Right? So here, grihasthas, kings, in position, wives, family, intrigue, you know, problems, politics. That's what goes on in our day-to-day life. Right? We're all devotees. We come to Mayapur, it's not supposed to be happening, right? It's happening here. This is the Lord's eternal substance. You come to the material world, there's politics. Right? Mayapur means more opportunity to remember Krishna. Does that make sense? So they're saying that all this is worked nicely by the Lord's grace. It's not just they're saying it, they understand it. Right? Arjuna is such a cat. Of such a personality, right? He's not going to marry this ordinary woman. So therefore, that he could have the opportunity to find out and actually win over those thousands of the girl that is suitable for him, that's the perfect match, that's by the Lord's grace. So, in other words, our lives also have to be surrendered to Krishna. Right? Our just day-to-day, down-home, mundane lives, everything has to be surrendered to Krishna. Krishna has to be seen. Sadhana we've given to Krishna. But what about the rest of it? Right? But you see, they're not, we don't, the idea is not to overbalance this. The idea is to add this to the already nicely going philosophy and sadhana and those things that are there. We add these things in. And it's nice. It works. It creates interaction. People want, we're talking about community. We want community. It means we want people to interact. Here's a way to interact, right? Big way to interact. Fathers and mothers are trying to contact this and that, interaction, meetings, this, engagement programs, weddings. Such a major way to interact. So many kids, they're going to grow up, they're going to get married. Tons of opportunity. But, no, the kids work it out themselves. Another opportunity, major opportunity lost. Right? So you just look at it. All the things that we want are right here. No, because Mlechas and Yamanas don't do that. But Mlechas and Yamanas don't even know their neighbor. I was talking to one devotee. He lived 20 years in the same apartment building, never knew or saw who his neighbors were. You know, the door is what? You know, the normal thing, 8, 10 feet away, opposite. You know, stairs come up, there's your door. Stairs go that way, and that's their door. He never knew who they were, 20 years. And they were there 20 years, he was there 20 years. Never knew who they were. Right? And so now, that's going to be our oddity. We don't end up as Vedic, so then what are you going to be into? What's your alternative? Where do you get it? You know? So that's the thing. It's impersonalism. Personalism is we don't like the Vedic, we get that, but we don't have any alternative. We get rid of the material world. This is the problem. Right? I want to get out. So I get out, and then what do? I stand in the Brahman and put on my bones. Even that, you don't even have thumbs to twiddle. That's the problem. That's why you come back to the material world. You get so bored, you gotta come back here to get a pair of thumbs so you can twiddle. Because there's nothing there. You know, you can't even do that. You know, so so that's the difficulty. So when he says, Nirvisesha Shunyavadi, we have to remember that it applies to us also. It's not just the dirty, filthy, stinky karmis. It applies to us. Bhagavatam, all the examples are here for us. They're not for the karmis. Karmis is the Garib Mahabharata. That's for devotees also, but it's also for the karmas. Bhagavatam is only for the devotees. So when they talk about here attached people and this, the forest, the material enjoyment, and all that's for us. It's not for the karmas. Karmas wouldn't understand it at all. So it's for us. So that's what's so nice about the Bhagavatam. The Mahabharata overemphasizes the culture and less the philosophy, hence Hindus. But the Bhagavatam is the perfect balance. It shows how the philosophy then is perfectly applied in one's life as a devotee. So you have all the culture that is presented in the Mahabharata, but you have it with the proper philosophical connection and understanding that the Bhagavatam gives. Does that make sense? Yes, we'll end here. Yes, what is it? one message. Could all hear? She's making the point that the parents need to, in raising the children, when the children have difficulties to go through various stages in life, have to be able to address where the child is at present with something that's practical for them where they are now. At the same time, be able to guide them to what, you know, in a way that can make them progressive towards, you know, what is the standard that is given by Guru Sadhguru Shastra. So it's, but you have to address what's now. So you have, she's pointing out there's two problems. One is that they won't address the difficulty of the child where they're at now. They'll just say what is the standard. And then the child can't follow that because they're not at that platform. Or because it's a problem, they don't want to deal with it, they want to give that to someone else. Like that. So because of that, then you know, members of the community don't get properly, I would say, exposed to nice interaction in which they'll develop, you know, fully as an individual. So that's the point. So that's the sort of emphasis is on, I say, responsibility. So that then is two. You have the standard of what you want to get to, and you have the realism where the individual is present. So that works for any dependent. For children, it will work if you are, you know, some kind of a temple or community leader for anyone under you, or on the national level. It's the same principles that you have to see is that there is a standard, and it is attainable, and we have to use our intelligence, take that responsibility to use our intelligence, make the endeavor to figure out where the individual is that is under our care, and how to get them to accept that standard and have a process to get there. Then they'll progress nicely. Because otherwise we generally always take the one or the other. Like that's, it's like, you know, it's the same thing, you have the path. And on one side you have the impersonalist, and on the other side you have the tajan. So it's always that principle is there. Those that get into the, it's like this, and those that don't care. You know, so it's always niyamagraha. Overly into the rules or reject. But the point is you have to find a balance. This is the rule, it must be followed, but where we're at today, we're going to do this much of it. Okay, we should chant 16 rounds, yes. A kid is not, can't chant 16 rounds. Okay, you chant what you can. You start there, and then if they have that, then slowly you get them there. Rather than, no, it's got to be 16 rounds, you have to find the balance. No, but the idea is that it's got to be 16, so you get one of two things. See, there's got to be 16 rounds. All kids can't chant, doesn't matter, they don't have to chant. But the idea is that, okay, let them chant what they can, let them progress through gradually, like that. So, Mataji pointed out is that then one example of this is of not taking responsibility of getting someone else is that you give them to the schools. The schools are doing it. Someone was explaining to me that this was, came out of Catholicism, this concept. Is that the kid up to the age of whatever they go to school, then they just had free rein to do whatever they like because they're young, they're cute, parents would interact and enjoy them as much as possible and all those nice things, and wouldn't train them at all. Then they went to the schools, because all schools are run by priests, and the priests would train them to be, you know, moral, upstanding, good Christians. So they would give them the knowledge and the culture. So that went on fine until the separation of church and state, and then when education became secular, then that meant the parents, by habit, weren't, because for basically hundreds and hundreds of years, that had been the method. But now then the school didn't do it. So then it's a problem. So nowadays it's not even looked for in the school. It's just somehow or another supposed to happen, right? That's the American ideal. Why, you don't know. Guy's just a funny guy, you know, goes to school, you know, lazy, this, that, just ordinary Joe, and then he comes home, and then his father is, you know, sick, and then his brother gets killed, and then he sees that there's a lot of responsibilities, and then by the end of the movie, then somehow or another, he's wiped out every other big mafioso, and he's the king of all the mafiosos in America. And it all happened in 2 hours. So it works in the movies. But unfortunately, in real life, the maverick thing is rare to happen. Very rare. So one has to endeavor for that. One has to endeavor. So the Vedic concept is that the schools will take care of that, but the same method the parents are doing, it's the same. There would be no difference in the training at home or the training at the school. So when they're young, they're too young for the school, and when they're older, they're too familiar for the home. So that's the advantage. So between the two of them, the parents, what they say, they use the same method, have the same standards, and have the same concept of getting one from point A to point B. Then it works, it's consistent. And then the child turns out to be balanced, because wherever he goes, his parents say the same thing, other members of the community say the same thing, the schools say the same thing, the books say the same thing. You know, so it's balanced like that. So that would be the taking it to that traditional application, is that it's supposed to be the, you know, like what do you call it, that famous African saying, it takes a village to raise a child, because there must be consistency throughout. So it's there. It's always important to see that that method must be based on Guru Sadhana Shastra. Because we see Prabhupada would do that. You know, we're very fanatic and very strong. The Prabhupada took, you know, hippies. You know, that was the best. That was East Coast. West Coast, he had the dirty hippies. You know, there you had hashberry. You know, that was another thing, right? Guys on the East Coast, you know, it looked a little better, a little cleaner. At least they took baths. But when we went to the West Coast, then that kind of that element got lost in that 3,000 miles. But so then, but he just dealt with them, you know. Jagannath went out and went to the, what is it, the park there? Golden Gate Park, right? Jagannath gets put on the stump of wood, right? No clothes on, just sitting there, right? And then everybody, and then all the hippies are doing their normal ring dance. But they're chanting Hare Krishna. So he starts there. But in starting there, it wasn't just, okay, you guys, it's only do this. When Prabhupada arrived in San Francisco, he was greeted by, you know, 50, you know, bearded, you know, and, you know, and bedraggled hippies, and, you know, all the best that Haight-Ashbury had to offer. And at the same time, as they all knew Krishna was God, we're not this body, we're Krishna's servants. Pleasing Krishna is the ultimate goal of life, and by chanting Hare Krishna, that's the method we're going to give them. So they had already been given the topmost philosophy that everything else in the Krishna consciousness would be founded on. So that's the point, is that principle can be given to any. You can give the principle of this principle here, connecting everything to Krishna. I can explain it to a 5-year-old, even to a 3-year-old. They can talk the language, it can be explained to them. Technical details, that's another thing. So this is, I would say, the difference between the Vedic and old school, and then what you have now is the so-called new school. I mean, that's if you want to be literal and call it a school, you know? Is that Vedic and old school, everything was explained. Old school, you would explain the reason behind it, why you have to do this, because you're going to get some benefit from it, you're lost from it if you don't follow. Vedic is that's explained, plus what is the principle on which it functions. Why is it? There is such a thing as social strata. And if you dress like this, you're going to find yourself in a lower strata. Then when you get older, when your opportunities come up, since you have grown up with all these people, you're in this community, when you start to work with them, they're going to think you're a bum. It's going to take you a long time, you know, and a very fat, you know, resume, you know, to correct that. So why not dress a little better now? And, you know, in 10 years, when it means something to you, you know, you're the one that has to put the food on the table, it'll be easier. You know? So that's the difference. New school is, well, it's nice, it's good, you know, kind of people, they think it looks good. But if you don't want, you dress however you want, and this and that, and then you end up with that. So that's the difference. So they're trying to be kind and nice, but actually, they're the worst enemy of the children. Like that. Because Vedic liberal is defined as broad-minded. A liberalist, a Vedic liberalist, can't accommodate the sphere, the spectrum from right to left. Your modern conservative can only accommodate right, your modern liberalist can only accommodate left. None of them are liberal. And actually, if you check who gives the most in charity, it's generally the right. The most charity, most money is coming out of conservatives going to charities. Though left always talks about it. So the modern concept of liberality is actually just narrow-mindedness shifted from conservative right to liberal left. It's the same keyhole vision. So because of that, then they don't explain because they've rejected those values. Well, the right wing, at least they have some old tradition and they say you should follow it. They may or may not know why, but at least they try to explain and get people through it. But the actual thing, the Vedic, is that you have to explain why it should be followed. Because children are inquisitive. They don't know why they don't want to follow. You may be able to force them to follow or this or that, but you know, it won't last. Right? But if you change the way they view it, you give them new perspectives on it and show them the tools in which they can function within that, then it's left up to their choice. But they must be given what is the standard and a method to get there, then you leave it up to them to. Just like you take the horse to the water, it's up to them if they want to drink. You don't just say, well, he may drink, may not drink, why bother? You know? So we do, so that's the point of you're just saying responsibly. You have to take responsibility, you have to make the endeavor. But it's perfect, what it becomes perfect when it is connected to the tradition and you give them a method to make a step-by-step way to get there. So, okay. Teach the child of his boundaries. And mix it up, and we end up with something very unique. right? Nobody can relate to it. The Westerners can't relate to it. The Indians can't relate to it. And the amazing thing is the devotees can't relate to it. But whatever it is, it's the standard, you know. So, yeah. So standards must be set. But that's the idea is we should try to set those standards according to the Bible, the principle of it. You know, the principle here is that girls look nice, boys want to marry them, therefore you should train the girl how to look nice and how to stick to one husband and train the boys how to take care of the girl so that, and they know how to impress the girl that she's going to want to spend the rest of her life with them. And family members should be trained to endeavor to do that. Make that work. That's what we get from here. Not that, okay, the next time there's a marriage, we're going to have to find bows and arrows and pots down there and all the boys stepping up to spring the bamboo bow, you know, like that. It might be fun, but probably unimportant. Yeah. So we'll end the class here. If anyone wants to stay for any questions, that we can stay. Otherwise, we won't. Gajaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanadeta Bhagavatam ki, China Daigo. Ah, that was it. You got this valuable hand of Draupadi. Yes, ma'am. Then we come up with the difficulty that we feel that we're less. You know, he gave the example that Prabhupada said, Prabhupada gave a few rules, I think, on deity worship. The devotees are very enthusiastic because he gave how much they could handle, so therefore they were enthusiastic. And then they said, oh, tell us more, Prabhupada. You know, is there any more? Prabhupada said, if I told you everything, you'd faint. Like that. I mean, I saw that once that we were discussing once technical details, something to do with the different aspects of water in the puja, if you want to get very technical. And this was the person who was very well respected in the movement as an authority in deity worship. And in the discussion came to a point where he just stopped and said, I can't go any further than this. I can't accommodate the subtleties of the differences. It was just like to the point where he was going to freak out. It wasn't like, well, I don't understand. It was just like, I can't accommodate this. And that was someone who had been long doing worship and it was very established and stuff like that. So let alone a bunch of, Wallens on, 3764 Watsika Avenue there, just rolled in from Venice Beach with their surfboard and very powerful. Yeah. Okay, so in there's two approaches. So you notice that we used both. But unfortunate because generally it's kind of upstream these things. I'll overemphasize the need for it, and so that will be taken as that's the major, when actually it's the minor. The need for it is the inspiration to do it. What you're going to do is the real thing. Like that. So, we're pointing out the need for it. So that can, the problem with that method, one, it starts to make one think about what one is doing. So that's important. But the weakness of it is it can create the feeling that I can't do it. Because if you know the person, you have that trust and all that, then you can take it little by little. You say something is taken or that, or you have the time to wait and then find the right moment to give. But in these, because they're kind of general audience and all that, then you have to go by the amalgamated mood. You know? And so in that, then you have to touch on things that are where there is resistance. You know? So when you try to move it forward, what I've seen is that if you just use the positive, there's a resistance, but you just already for them connected to Krishna and inspire them in that. They may be conspired to do it, but they may, at the time they will, but when they leave the room, they may not do it because they'll fall back into their own habits because they don't see the need for it. Because everything's fine. They have a resistance to something that's stated in the scriptures. But they're engaged in devotional service and you don't want to disturb that, so you just engage what they're already doing, which you should do, but you kind of finesse that point. You adjust it. And if it's done nicely, then it's like, okay, it's not important, or, later, or that can develop, or, you use something where the problem would do where it wouldn't be negated. But nowadays, it's like, oh, don't be fanatic. I would really love to see a definition of fanatic, a written down, black and white definition. Because basically, fanatic means what I wouldn't do is fanatic. That's, I would say, is the short form of the definition of meaning of fanatic in ISKCON. What I don't see as important is fanatic. That's basically, there's no common definition, but I would say that would be the easiest. So then, but it's not a matter of process. So then, you present it to so that one sees that there is some weakness in one's goal or in one's process or in one's understanding of one's own position. Then, if you have the luxury of the time and another person's patience and goodwill, then you can take it through into the positive. But sometimes you don't get that luxury. People storm out of the room or this or that. Some people are appreciating it, other people are freaking out. Because of differences in definitions of words. Because in the Vedic tradition, you have a set of words that has a common definition. Like in the Vedic, for Nyaya, for any discussion, they have a book called Tarka Sangraha, which has been compiled and gives a definition of every word that there is in an element that you would deal with in dealing with material energy. It gives a definition for each of the 24 elements, of all the rasas, of all the colors, of all everything like that. So it's very clear. When you say earth, it means this. Otherwise, earth can mean, your nation, or it can be, something that you make money out of, but there's a common definition. So, therefore, when you use a method like this, then you kind of like crack through the normal. But in doing that, it can create insecurity, because one is secure in what's already created level. And that's a difficulty, because if you're dealing with students, they're there for that purpose. They may not like it, but that's why they're there. But adults, then, they're already supposed to have created a favorable perspective and identity that will be good for their elevation. In majority, there may be some fine-tuning, but difficulty comes when the adult hasn't created that good of an identity that really works for them in all time, places, and circumstances, and just needs fine-tuning by association and study and experience and others, others hearing from others. So then that creates a thing. So when you kind of like pull the rug out to make them aware that, hey, I should be going farther, it can create, lack of confidence. So that's why then the other, you see, was at the end, it was used as a conclusion, is that the main thing, this is secondary, the main thing is the devotional activities, the sadhana, Bhagavad activities that we're already doing. Those are the main, because what we're talking about, at least here, is elements of the level of Varnashram. We're not even discussing Pancharatra, which is higher than that. So devotees generally have the Bhagavad in place quite well, because that's the most important. The others are secondary. So then you bring into perspective, that's already there, now it's just a matter that's already nice, but now you can improve that by adding in that all your emotions, your intellectual, your sensual platforms, your need for liberation, all that, your dharma, the karma, and moksha are properly connected to Krishna. Otherwise, you know, then if it's not, devotees are still endeavoring for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, but they have their own way. Dharma is, you know, Christmas, birthdays. They have so many rituals. You know, the ritual of serving the prasad. You sit down, first you plunk the pot down on the ground in front of them. Then you kneel down. Then a big smile. Then you go, would you like some? And then you go, yes, please. Then they look at you again. Then they put in the spoon, and then they pull out some, and they look at you again and get that nice rapport. Then they go to put it on your plate. Then, if you just drop it on the plate, that would be impersonal, because you're kind of like, you know, ugh. So you have to put it on the plate. You just push it onto the plate, like if it's such a potty, you actually physically push it down with your fingers. And if you put it on the spoon, then if it didn't fall right, you kind of scrape it up and make it nice. Because if I just dropped it, even though that's bathing and it's clean, but it's not personal, you know, it's I don't have that rapport. And then as I put, then I make the eye contact again, and then like this, and then you smile again, and then all that, and any more, and oh thank you, and then the spoon goes back in the thing, then you smile again, then you pick it up, then you go to the next person, plunk it down, and start again. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating at all. It's going on quicker than this, it's more subtle than this, but this is exactly what's happening. At every moment there's that eye contact and trying to get that rapport and taste of, I'm serving prasad, are you happy, and all this kind of thing. And in this way, even though you may have 6 or 8 people taking prasad, it takes 5 to 10 minutes before the guy at the end has anything to eat. Right? That is a ritual. I've seen it here, I see it any house I go, unless it's an Indian house. Every Westerner does the same ritual. Like that. And they train the kids in it, everything. And it's not, it's you can't get, it doesn't happen. Well, the Vedic is the prasad served quickly because you're there for eating, and then while they're eating, then you have conversation with them. If it's nice, that's where you get your rapport. Not in the serving, because that's you and me. It's like, but that's been created by our devotees. It doesn't happen on the Western table. If they're serving, if you actually have someone serving, it's very sober, this, that, thing, this, more of this, it's very efficient. And if it's not, it's just all piled up there, and everyone just goes and takes what they want, and you know, hey, give me that, and this and that. It's all happening. So where did this come from? It's not Indian. It's not Western. So devotees have created their own religion. So therefore we speak this way to break that bubble, and hey, why don't we get, you know, it doesn't work. It's not efficient. You don't get the efficient. You don't eat. I bet if those, you have 5 preparations, you get one once. You know, you have to call. I mean, even though they'll make this whole thing, you have to ask for if you want to be served again. If they're taking such care, why do you have to ask? No, you have to ask. Oh, I didn't know you wanted. What do you mean you don't want the plate's empty? Because they're not looking at the plate, they're looking at you. You know? So what it is that is supposed to be done, they're doing something, it creates interchange, or exchange. So rasa is obtained, but no one is satisfied. You know? But if you've only known this, then you know, it's pretty normal for it. But, you know, if you've ever grown up where they serve prasad properly, you can't eat in those environments. You can't be satisfied. Because you can't eat, you can't talk, you can't, you know, it's like it's too, you know. Or the talking will be so engaging that you can't eat, you know. It's not light conversation. You can eat and that, and there's some gap and something, you know. You know, what do you think about, you know, and in the meeting they said this, it's kind of like, well, you know, it's fine. I'm eating now, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, this is important, you know, it's just our lives and all that. Well, if I don't eat, I die. That's also my life. It's kind of like that. You know, like that. But you know what I'm saying? So like that, we create our own religion. Because that's the principle. The conditioned soul can't function without it. He has to have religion. So now it's a matter of he learns one from authority or he creates his own. You know, like you have a gang. They create their own religion. You know, what is their dress? What is their talk? What is their walk? What is their values? How do they get it? How someone's initiated into their group, how someone's sent out of their group, how they're punished. Every gang has all this down. You know? So unless, and kids are always creating. You get some kids together and play, they're already creating their own religion and playing. So you have to correct them to see that they do it as humans and they don't kill each other. So it's just they have to have it. Otherwise, how do you know, unless there's something stable, how do you interact? So that creating a standard, having a stable, something to rely upon, that's important. So that principle is important. But the problem is if the detail of that principle is weak, then your whole process is weak. And generally, the principle isn't seen. Like you could ask, you could probably ask that, what is the method of serving prasad? I think you get some blank faces. They would go, you feed people. Okay, but how are people fed? No, they're feeding themselves. They put it in their own mouth, so that means you're going to put it in their mouth. What are you doing? No, you're putting it on the plate. But they won't come up with that prasad service means the most efficient way to get everything on the plate in the order that is proper for eating, in the combination and in the volume that the person can handle. You get a definition like that from anybody? Would you get a definition like that from anybody? Probably not. Because they don't know what prasad serving is. Therefore, it's, it's kind of a... And because that's too much trouble and it's too slow, it's inefficient, then what is the default setting of any bigger program sponsored by the temple? You know, buffet. Because they don't know how to serve, so automatically that, and even the buffet doesn't work sometimes, so then it's just you put the buckets with the spoons and everyone gets it themselves. It's simply because they don't know how to serve prasad. It's not that buffet is more efficient. It's slower. You got to stand in line, you're bored. The other one, at least just sitting. What's better, to sit for 5 minutes waiting to eat or to stand for 5 minutes waiting to eat? You know? Therefore, it's not more efficient. But it's said to be because they don't know how to serve prasad. I've seen devotees, and they say, well, I've made practical here. I've seen devotees who've grown up in India. Like that, like there's one devotee, I think, particular in London, the Manor. Because he was in India early days, so very much absorbed the culture and all that. He could go in there and have the big programs and feasts like that. He himself practically can single-handedly serve all the devotees. He's so efficient. Does it well, nice. He himself's a very tough character, but he's very kind and servant. You know? Like that, just goes, serves like that, and everybody else is there, like this. He just goes and serves. So it's very, very, so it can be done. You know, there it is in the manner. I saw it in my own eyes. You know, somebody actually served a job. So it is possible. You know, it was today, it wasn't 5,000 years ago, or 100 years ago, or, you know, or in India, or okay, and, you know, no, it was right there in the manor. Western devotee, you know, with the same plastic bucket and ladle, you know, completely useless, but he was doing it. You know, so it is possible. So, therefore, you have to try to find the balance. Is that you pull the rug out, but then immediately you have to be able to provide a method to get there. Like that. The best is you can deal with just the method and explain it in its importance and how to apply it all at once. Then you avoid that. So if someone catches it or is submissive or is inquisitive, it may work. But if they are very confident that what they're doing is fine, it won't work. Because what they're doing works for them. You know, you see that now. The devotees that here, then they go out for some time, then they come back. They come back with the method of when they left. It worked then, it doesn't work now. Principle of it works. You know, the leadership, the things like that. But the detail of their application, the attitude of that doesn't work. And it's just, they don't want to change. You know, and then there's our whole prophet did like that. But, I mean, I've heard of people trained by prophet, how they serve Krishna. I haven't seen anyone serve like that, except for those who are trained by prophet, you know, or trained, learned in India from high class Indians. Otherwise, I don't see. This is one example. So, you know, I just figured out now, I must admit. Now it's, let's see, first cooking was 74. I had to cook khichdi for three people. It took me 3 hours in Bangalore, right? First time, you know. Panchanavita couldn't figure out why it takes so long to cook khichdi for three people and take 3 hours. But whatever. And then coming in contact, seeing how the cooking was going on in the 70s, they had a method where they'd make a chance, throw in the vegetables, put in the salt, turmeric, mix it up, put a lid on it, and then like steam it. And it had such a unique flavor. It means I don't find anyone cooking, any temple cooks like that now. There's not one. If you find individuals who were cooks back then, and generally they left the temple and they just cook in their house, they still cook in that way to get that taste. But there was a unique taste from that style of cooking. So then you come to India, India's a cooking, you have the parais, you know, the woks, so they put in the chaans, you put in the vegetable, you stir fry it a bit like that, and then you may put water and boil it, or a little water, and then steam it, this, that. Couldn't get the similar flavor. You know. And it needs more ghee and stuff. This method we could cook with less ghee and it was very tasty. You know, we cook it in its own water, stuff like that. Then came across about a couple of years back, we noticed it was a term used by many aristocratic Bengalis. In the cooking, they call it roasting. You know, and we would think roasting means, you know, you stick it on a, you know, on a spit and stick it in an oven, right? Like that, or at least in a tray and put it in an oven. No, this is, you put some ghee, you put in the vegetable, and they would do it after you stir fry it, they put the lid on it, and with the salt and all that, then the water from the vegetable would come and it would simultaneously get fried and steamed at the same time. Then for some reason, I'm not sure why, just within the last 2 weeks, something came up that there wasn't enough ghee and I didn't want anyone to put water. So I put the lid on it right at the beginning. And it steamed and got fried at the same time. And it did its own juice, and it started to have that flavor that the earlier cooking was. Then I understood, it just hit me, I would say, 3 days ago, that that's what Prabhupada taught the devotees. But it doesn't quite work out the same when you don't do it in a wok, you do it in a pot that's taller than it is wide. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the only pots devotees have. They're about this wide at the bottom. You know, they're not maybe a little 20 inches wide at the bottom, they were probably 30 inches tall. So you can't cook in the same way. You can only steam it. You wouldn't stir fry it. So I became bewildered coming to India seeing the stir frying. Because then Bhakti Churumaj looked at Papa and it was stir frying. So then I figured it's that they're stir frying it, but they're stir frying it with a lid on it. It's not open. So it's simultaneously getting a little bit of water that's coming from it, and it's steaming while it's roasting. It takes less ghee. Because when you mix oil and ghee, they don't mix, so the place stays slippery. But if you only put ghee, you need a lot to keep a piece of hot metal slippery. Well, this is, the water comes out of the vegetable, so it's got water in it. And then that gets covered with the oil. And so automatically it's all slippery, it doesn't stick. So that's after 30 years. Figured out that what had been given in the beginning, actually how it functioned, what's the principle of it, and applying. Otherwise it was seen that the detail was seen, but not the principle behind it. Does that make some sense? Not exactly sure how we got into that example. No, it was explaining something that we were. Yeah, but it's about doing what Prabhupada said, yeah. And so nowadays you can say that Prabhupada cooked like this, but Prabhupada was specific. This spice goes in here, this one in here. Use one spice or two spices. But somehow or another, when the devotees would have the Gujaratis come to the temple and teach them to cook, they would use a variety of spices. But the devotees couldn't remember what spice went with what. They just knew all these spices were used. So then they started this ritual of the chance game. Chance game goes like this. Go over to the fire, light it, turn it on full blast. Run off, look for a pot. Put the pot on. Run off, look for the spices. Come back just before, if you're lucky, generally you are lucky. You get back before you burnt a hole in the pot where the pot has warped. Then, now by this time, this ghee is smoking. Now this is where the essence of the game comes. This is where the technique and the lightness of the hand becomes important. They have a spice rack that has 20 spices in it, right? Probably get a few, but 20 spices. And so then you roll that over, and then you start, the game is you grab some from each and throw it in as fast as you can before it burns completely black. Like that. So that's the chance game. And you go to most temples, that's the way they cook. Somehow or another, someone started that in the big temples, because only the big temples had Gujarati communities. And so out of London, you know, New York and all these different places, they started this game and everybody else followed suit. So it's a ritual. It has nothing to do with cooking. You know, taste definitely has nothing to do with pop cuisine. But it's just the standard method. And then, you know, then it's wondered why everybody's eating outside. You know, everyone has their own kitchen. You know, because at least in the spice game, the chance game, the pot, the ghee, the spices are closer together, so, you know, you have less chance of burning, it comes out a little better. The game is of a higher standard. Yeah, so then the difficulties they fall back on, well, Prabhupada did like this, but sometimes as he did like that in those circumstances, the principle will always apply, the detail may be different. I think that's what the point was. Is that 30 years later, I figured out what was the actual application of the principle that Prabhupada gave. Because it always disturbed me that I wasn't cooking in that way. You know, because you learn so many things but then it's not still done in that method. It comes out differently. And then I'm always thinking, I should cook that way. And I was thinking, it's a completely different method. You don't stir fry, nothing. I didn't understand you are stir frying, but you're doing it with a lid on. That's all. So all I had to do was add the lid, right? So it's like so many zeros, and you add the one, you know, Krishna. So I had so many cooking things, so all I had to do was add a lid, you know, and then it worked. So many times that happens, and then gets stuck. Oh, that came from the point is that sometimes those who are students are younger, easier to teach, and then those who come out, there's that thing and their identity, and then they won't give that up. Because they were like that when Prabhupada was here, and Prabhupada dealt with it. But it wasn't that there was any problem. You know, Prabhupada deal with the rough and ready, but he also was able to deal with guys like Ambarish. You know, soft, culture, gentle. They weren't, you know, street hooligans. Like that. And so Prabhupada could deal. And when we see with time, it was getting more and more refined. And but somehow or another there's this other roughness came in. But that was engaging the roughness that was already there. You know what I'm saying? We go out and that night at whatever it is, double it. And so that thing was engaged until you're fully engaged. And then the next comment was boil the milk. Somehow the boil the milk comment to this day has not been taken. Still just, you know, he says, how many temples, how many books, how many... That is, but that should be going on. And once you've got that, then increase the quality. That's the boil of the milk. Right? How are we going to get into the refining sadhana if there isn't any? Or service if there isn't any? Right? The devotees would sit downstairs. Then it was time for prasad. 26 second after, they go out and eat. They go back downstairs. And Prabhupada will do all the cooking, all the marketing, all the washing the pots, cleaning the room. So you got to get on to the standard. Once they're at the standard, they're fully engaged, body, mind, and words. Now you can start working on the quality of that. So then the mistake is made that, well, Prabhupada just, you know, but he didn't get into all this. It's like, why is it from 75 in the same boil the milk? Why was he talking about Varnashram? You know, so what do you mean? Prabhupada just did it like this. He wasn't involved in this esoteric office. What do you mean? It's right here in the book. Draupadi was the most beautiful daughter of King Drupad. Why does he have to mention? You could just say, Draupadi was the daughter of King Drupad, and somehow or another, all these princes were in Maya. But Drupad decided that, you know, he thought and thought he wanted Arjuna to be the husband. So he decided, well, I got to cut out all these lusty guys, so I'll make this thing that nobody else can do, only he can do. Like that. And then just to doom them because, you know, he really thought it was boring that he had to go to the swine bar and do all this stuff with his sister, but since he had to, he was going to get his sister because he knows how restless the girls are. So he decided he was going to introduce each and every prince, at length, ad infinitum, you know, and just get every now and again they look over and gloat, you know, and see how poor she is now, like that. And, and then our Karna came up and he came forward, but Draupadi said, well, you know, just nice, you're a nice guy, but it just wouldn't be cool, you know, if we got married, you know, because the, you know, even though it doesn't really matter, some people who are, you know, low-minded might consider that you're not the standard, and then, you know, that would reflect badly on us in the family, though. We are individuals, family doesn't really matter. I guess we could do it ourselves, but, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure about it. It's too quick. So we can discuss it later. But the soya bar is going on now, so let the next one step up and discuss. And after that, you know, then, how do you say? Arjuna, you know, he was one, and you know, they were married, and you know, this part about the valuable hand, well, valuable maybe because she was wearing some of those old ornaments, or I'm not sure, but, and Arjuna was lamenting, okay, and then he was thinking about how, you know, it's so cool that he got in there, and, you know, over all those other guys, and, what do you think? Then we get rid of all these politically incorrect and distasteful things, you know, we're beautiful, valuable, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, actually, that's really bad. We can translate the purports into jive. Ebonics, purports. You know, so Arjuna, who is now? Karna wasn't a homeboy, so she told him, hey, man, you know, I'm cool, so step aside, you know, let the other guys come up. might be fun. So in doing this, you very much have to watch the audience and all that, because I must say is this method works well here because it's been worked for a while. The devotees know generally, you know, in Mayapur, devotees are more into philosophy. You have so much education going on here, the MIHE or the BIHE in Vrindavan, and they study and it's Mayapur. Or if you go to kind of more places like this works excellent in New York, as long as you don't hit an emo like that. Don't use this on emos. Like that. Straight edge, anybody else, no problem, not on emos. Like that. But my recommendation is never, with a capital N, underline old. Use this on Indian communities outside of India. And even within India, be very careful. Because they have not handled it at all. Even though they're devotees, they're more Western than the Westerners. So, it's very difficult. The nice devotee situated, there's no problem. But if they're still Hindus, don't use it. It doesn't work. If it's new devotees, then you don't have to be as intense. They already have it out in the material world. You just say that this is what's good, and then this show slight, we can immediately move into the thing. This method is used basically because we're working on old communities, or strong identities. And it works in New York because it's a strong identity. But if you can give something logical, it'll change immediately. But here is because you're dealing with old communities with this, you know, serious histories. And just by nature, they just go on doing whatever they've ever done, and nobody ever thinks about it. You know, it's just, you know, normal. So it's kind of to wake up. And generally, it works. Sometimes, if somebody is overly agitated, like we saw before, you have a word that needs something, then you hit issues. And then when you hit issues, then you start getting these long soliloquies, you know, during the question and answer. You know, it turns into a cough, thing like that. But it's the chopping method. But the thing is, in using the chop, you have, it's not just the chop. The chop is there to get at what you want to do. The point is not to say that something's wrong. The point is for someone to ask. Like that. And generally you'll see in the questions, very few are on how to apply it. They're generally on, is it real or a doubt about it? Is it apply? But it's not about application. So that's why I'll use this for strong. I've been stumped many many times I'd be taking one point and pushing, and doubts and this and that. And then at some point somebody asks me how to apply it. And because I wasn't going in that line of thought, the whole development had been on why the need for it. Then it'll sometimes take a few minutes to kind of like after some waffling to get on track and then get that, because it's just probably three times or twice in a year someone asks like that. Generally it's always just trying to establish that it should be done. Very few ask, well, how do you actually do it by it? I got 10 pairs of shoes, how do I apply this? No one asks. It just doesn't. Because it's always, we're an expert, of course. I'm not a Christian, And go, I don't know what's happening. Because that's a whole other discussion. Is that okay? Like that? Yeah. So it's a good method. Vishwanath uses this. This is the balance. You have Vishwanath and Baladev. Baladev is anything connected to Krishna is Krishna conscious. It's bhakti. Vishwanath is bhakti is bhakti. Everything below bhakti is an aspiration for bhakti. So therefore you have to identify where you are and what is the technique at the particular point you're at to get you to the next stage. But don't get puffed up and think you're a devotee. So when there's attitude, you use Vishwanath. When there's no attitude, you use Baladev. Because there's no obstacle. You just so that's it. So the balance between and you just see what's working. You start with the one, you start more pleasantly, if it's going nicely, then great. If not, then you step out of it to the other one. When that's not working, step back. Because people can only handle so much of their concept of their identity and world being threatened. Those who are very introspective can handle more. Those who are not introspective, they can't handle it at all. So generally for them, you just show some positive and finesse it and get out, try to avoid any issues. But those who can discuss, then you can get issues and actually their perspective on it. Because the problem is the perspective is their identity. That's the thing. So that's why it's difficult to give someone a different perspective, because that means having a realization of broadening their identity. Their conditioned identity. I'm very smart, or I'm fast, or I'm slow, or I'm practical, or I'm moral, or I'm... These are all conditioned identities, because the soul's none of that. The soul's a devotee. So having to deal with those, then you have to judge what works, what's not. So it's much easier on individuals or small groups to do this kind of interacting. But in a bigger group, then you have to take the general vibe. And the problem with that, if it's really mixed, then you end up kind of having to deal with the lowest common denominator, and then you have nothing for those who are senior. So all tend to up it. And all hit the upper end of it. But don't say, it shouldn't be something that will disturb it if it's lower, but I'll hit the upper end. And that means I'll aim at the senior people. Like that. And then the lower may catch something, may not. Because they're the ones who are going to lead and set the example. Or if you hit it with a general audience from the bottom, then the seniors have nothing. Therefore, you see, Bhagavatam class devotees go, but it's not like rated high on their list of important aspects of the day. But you see, like the festival, special people come, like that, then they start, it's more serious. People give a nice class or nice stories, or like you discuss remembrances of Prabhupada's reunions, those are very much appreciated because it's aimed at that level. things, it works. So that's also a method. So sometimes then we get some wider questions because it wasn't understood. Or as you're using issues as examples, then it strikes notes and brings out issues. Like today, that was an example. Actually, the last so many classes was somehow or another resonated on personal issues that they come up with. Because it's mixed with emotion, they can't state it succinctly. Then everybody gets to enjoy the presentation. So I'm going to have to work on that. How to get it where it creates questions, but not that. In other words, you want to make it comfortable that people are willing to ask questions and say what's on their mind. Because a lot of times you say something, they won't ask questions. They have questions, they won't ask them too sharp. Or you haven't sparked questions. So then we would work on something where in the beginning there's generally not questions, but we would deal and generally somebody who's pretty wild would ask a question. But you don't answer the question to them, you answer to everybody else because they won't understand the question. Therefore, people who are crazy are not a disturbance to the class as long as they'll ask the question and stop. They don't know when to stop their disturbance because they'll ask a question that nobody else would ask. Everybody else is interested in it, but they won't ask. You're saying about Vaishnav etiquette, but this lady here sitting next to me, this morning said this to me, so is that proper Vaishnav etiquette? No one in the right mind would ask us a question. But it does open up the thing for Vaishnav etiquette and stuff like that. So when you answer nicely, then that inspires other people who are more balanced and start asking questions. And then it goes. And you create an environment when they're speaking, you make them feel comfortable. Because asking questions is delicate, so if there's any obstacle seen, most of them ask questions. So therefore, you have to leave it really open. But then the problem is then you get someone who walks through that door and doesn't mind that attention and that encouragement. And so even though they stated it in the first few sentences, they're inspired and they say it again and again and again and again. But if you cut them off, it'll correct it and everybody will be happy you cut them off because everybody else also understood. But at the same time, as then they're worried that you'll be sharp with them. What if they ask something stupid, you'll cut them off. So I haven't worked that one out yet. Because that's something new. I haven't had this before. I've had wild people. It's obvious they're nuts, so even if you do cut them off, everybody understands. But I haven't had where people who aren't start going, and because you hit an issue for them, then they just, comes bubbling out and going on. That for me is a new. So I can't give you any recommendation how to deal with that because I haven't figured it out myself. Maharaj's point is that you generally focus on tattva because tattva is more general. I mean, it's more essential because rasa is based on the tattva. For us, it's technically it's the other way around. But when it comes in the reflection, it's you have rasa that therefore there's tattva. That tattva that reflects into here is tattva, then manifests rasa. Krishna is God, then we're his servants. We're jiva, we can have five relationships with him. Right? So that's how it starts here. There it's yam kama krodha sanjata. By the love that you already have for Krishna, that manifests the form. So it's by association with devotees that love matures, that manifests your form. So it's different. So the tattva is easier because then you can, everybody can relate if you make it, if you get into technicalities, you know, like that. But it can't be a dry technical like that. So that also we're having a problem for. Janana has pointed that out. Just kidding. So he was wondering, has this got anything to do with emotional service? So he tried to pull that back. A good association with the sadhus. The tattva, rasa, you can pull it off if you can do it really well. Like that. So like Raghunath Maharaj can do that, Indudu Maharaj can do it. I've seen if he'll do it, he's very shy, Govind Maharaj. Then they can tell pastimes, bring out the different aspects and all that. So, and that makes very interesting class. When you can do that, that's very nice. Awesome. But tattva you can always apply. I guess if you practice that, the rasa you can always apply also. It's a matter of practice. Because you see these other devotees are so expert. Jagannath Maharaj, they tell the stories and they get into it. Like that. So it's very well received if you can do it. It creates a lot of enthusiasm. So that's more like positive going forward. But here it's generally it's kind of like getting a person to understand what they should do to a group. I guess that comes from just that's the habit of what you do in a group. You know, so that just filters through here.
Fresh new start. Some will see it's death.
there's the ideology and the reality. So, you know, it's all soda as it comes. But the Vedic is rites of passage are conception needs, because conception determines what soul you call. You know what I'm saying? A lot of grains are being eaten. That's making a lot of semen. Right? And so there's a lot of individual souls that you could choose from. Depending on your consciousness, basically you tend to get one or the other. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. The consciousness at the time of conception is what determines what soul is attracted out of the database of souls that are available to take birth in devotees' families. Right? So if you're duly married, right there you cut out all the ghosts. You're not married, then you cut out all those who are not ghosts. Your consciousness is Krishna conscious, then you're talking about devotees before that had sadhana, had sound standing, and this and that, four rags, like that. You don't, you're depending on that degree that it's just lust, then you're starting to talk about three regular principal devotees, two regular principal, one regular principal, you know, or the famous LA one. Yeah, we follow the three regular principles. No meat, no fish, no eggs. So, yeah, like that. So, we got them here in our own community. Look at them. Yes, it is. You know, they want to chant japa. No, that means they weren't much into chanting japa last night. You know, they don't want to follow sadhana. They don't want to go to monk life. They don't want to dress as a devotee. But you look at adults. There's tons of adults here. They're like that. I was in Calcutta the other day. I saw two devotees walk by me. You wouldn't have recognized them. You know? Complete karmic clothes. You know? And somehow or another they're more nice than... I mean, you can't tell me fine muslin cloth is less comfortable. I mean, less comfortable. Yeah, it's not comfortable. And that thick jean material in 45 degree weather is more comfortable. And guaranteed those pants are not washed every day. So somehow I'm being told that it's practical. I resent that. So now that devotee died today, they would be someone who would wear, okay, they'll agree to wear devotional clothes in the temple. But as soon as they get out of the temple, when they run around in the house and hear the community, they won't wear it. That's the reality. You know what I'm saying? We just take all the ideal, oh, this, that. But ideal, yes. Ideal means Krishna. You think of Krishna at the moment of inception, then you get a ray of Vishnu. You think, wow, this feels good. You get a kid who they're only interested in. Why do you have these little kids there when they're five and they're playing around with this and that? Because that's what they're based on. That's the reality. You see devotees die in this community. They go down a nice grade, but that's the ones here that made the endeavor to come here and die here. What about the ones that are dying somewhere else or hang themselves and become a ghost? So you're not married, you have illicit sex, that devotee gets to come with you. Why, and then you wonder why you can so mental. Why he hates you, why he has issues, why you can't accept authority. This is the reality. But devotees don't think about this. They just go on. I heard the other day someone said, I had my kids without garment on, they turned out fine. I can give you a long list how they're not fine. You know, based on those principles of what would have been avoided by Karma. Their lack of respect and authority, their inability to cooperate with others, their anger, their feelings of jealousy, all these things, these aren't symptoms, their lack of ability to follow Vedic injunctions. These are all symptoms of someone not within our natural system. So that means, Garbhodan means Varnashram. So we have to know what to look for. They're nice guys, they're nice people, they interact nice, but hey, that's a wonderful one. And then, when these are, Prabhupada disciples and stuff, what's the big deal? Why be fanatic? Like that. Another one, they're saying something about, we've got to go, and this and that. Wife's pregnant again, also, that's nice. I said, not really, it was a wild movie, and we got a little agitated, and now she's pregnant. I heard that out of the mouth of the problem. So that's the point, it's not going on. So, otherwise we would speak sweet and nice and everything, but, how long can you go on, that it's all nice and wonderful? It's not. So the point is, therefore, if conception's not right, the other rites of passage won't have the same meaning. But even if it's not, whatever. Then you have so many things that then the child at the first month they grow general, and then after the first month or 3 months, I'm not sure which it is, but at that point it switches and becomes either male or female. So that's the time to do the next rite of passage if it's the first child. Then they become conscious at 7 months, and that's the next rite of passage. They become conscious, that's special. Right? So, what is your inherent nature is an important concept. What is your gender, that is an important concept. Because it establishes your duties. What is your nature? If you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, it establishes your duties. If you're a Valakshya, it establishes your duties. Then your consciousness, when your kid first becomes conscious, even if it's in the womb, then there's a ceremony. Then they're going to be born. It's going to be a bad experience, right? Time, rites of passages are where there's something significant in your life that's going to change the way you think or feel. So the child before that, possibly, who's lucky, has been offering prayers to Vishnu and this and that. The time of birth is such a wild situation that they forget all that. You can imagine having your head crushed and squished like that for God only knows how long. It's trouble. So therefore there's another ceremony done then. Then birth, the first time you breathe and come out in the world and you're gonna drink milk and you're gonna relate to all the people around you, then there's another ceremony, and that's for intelligence. Birth, I guess, for intelligence. Right? Then the next one is Namakara. Then that's done for that all the planets are going to have proper influence on you. Right? Then next is Paushtikarma after 3 months. The child is born in a place and you stay in that place. Then after 3 months the mother comes out of that place. Then that child will be able to live in one place his whole life if he wanted to. Now, you're born over there in the hospital, then you go to the house over here, and then from there you move here, you move there. And then I know for hospitals, by the time they come here, they've been in 30 different places. 30. They never had, That's an important thing. Because stability, means You want to have, you know, your brahmachari, great. Better. And if you're a householder, ladies like stability. No lady likes packing up and moving. She'll move because she'll think it's better, but then she expects that to be stable. Well, that didn't work. Okay, that one to be stable. That one to be stable. You know, 30th time, maybe that one to be stable. So that's just, so being stable in life, that's very important if you want to be a householder. Women, especially kids. Okay, the adults move. Kids hate moving out of the house they grew up in. I can say that. Parents may or may not, but they hate it. Unless it's a devotee, it's like you move to Mayapur or something like that. But whatever is their, they hate moving out of the house they grew up in. They hate it. Loathe. Because for them, that's home. The new place is their parents' dream house. But home is something else. So that's an important rite of passage. Right? Chudakara, then for the health and all these different things, purification, shave the head. If they do it boring the ears, that's for lust. It makes them look good, but it reduces lust. Real beauty comes from reducing lust. You increase lust, it's one kind of beauty, but it's not actual beauty. Real beauty is when there's no lust. You know what I'm saying? You see someone who's very lusty, it's obvious. They don't look attractive. Someone who's detached is more attractive. Right? Little kids are attractive because on certain areas they're detached. So they're fun. Because you want to feed them. They don't care. So you want to feed them. You know, they want to be fed if you have a good relationship. Nice. If not, you know, hey, get it yourself. So therefore, that's important. Anuprasana, digestion. If digestion is not good, then how are they going to have good health? Your health is based on your digestion. Your digestion is good, therefore you're healthy. That's why in India, if you're gaining weight, that means you're digesting. Therefore, they won't say, hey, you're getting fat. They'll say, wow, you're getting healthy. Because right? Some fat is not considered bad, it's considered attractive. Obese, that's another thing. But even then, they won't bother anybody. But skinny is considered low health. You know, there's something wrong. If you're skinny, there's something wrong with it. Modern health is skinny, so supposedly you look good, but I don't know. I have a feeling of that. Tweety was never a sex icon. Marilyn Monroe was fat by modern standards. She would not make it on the front of Vogue magazine. No, or Mae West, or any of those ones from all the 30s, 40s, 50s. None of them would make it now. It all would be seen. You know, now you gotta be as skinny as anything. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, digestion is important. Considered more of a right of passage. What do you call it? Biloba? Or what's that disease? Huh? Bulimia. Bulimia, yeah, it's considered more of a right of passage than that. Of course, the other one makes you look good, but then the first writing, when you first start to learn to write, because then you're becoming educated. That's very important. Then initiation, that's the most important. And then for the social structure, then marriage. Then you start all over. So the Vedic, then they start with marriage, because that's where it all starts from. There's marriage, then after marriage you have garbhana, and then you have all that, and then the child gets married, starts the next cycle. And then separately, then they list death. So then that's two, social and physical, right? So social then means sannyas, and physical means, yeah, the soul separates from the body. Like So these are all important stages, and it's obvious why they're important, because they have long-term effect on your life. How you die depends upon how you come through now. On the mundane platform, 25% of your karma, your karma in this life, depends upon the death ritual in your last life, if it was performed or not. If it was performed, then another 25% of your life, your karma comes true. Right? Let us say that you were a Kshatriya in the last life. So that has 25% influence on this life. If you had the death rite, then that comes through smoothly. So naturally the Kshatriya will become prominent, because now it comes 50%. The death rite wasn't performed, that thing of Kshatriya doesn't come through, so 50% is missing. So then, because of that, it wasn't done, so therefore you will probably be born in a family that doesn't perform rites. So that automatically throws you out of the Kshatriya thing. And then you fall into a family that doesn't perform rites. Then, by growing up with them and associating, that's the other 25%. So you see how important death is on the mundane platform. For us, then the death rite is everyone's sort of kirtan and all those things and that, because then we're not worried about coming back, we're trying to get out. So that's that rite of passage, then, you know, it's the ultimate. Well, the other is just a step into the next, again and again and again. Is it always guaranteed they'll go back to Godhead if someone dies in kirtan? There's a very good chance. Like that. See, also here is going back to Godhead would need to be defined. We will think of going back to Godhead meaning going to Goloka. Right? But according to the Acharyas, going back to Godhead means going to Gokula. So now you can either come into Gokula in an advanced state or not so advanced state. So as long as you've thought of Krishna in some way, Krishna, the name, the devotees, then you'll get into Gokula. But even if you weren't that advanced before, then the residents of Gokula will train you. Right? And if you had more material attachments, then you know, things will go a little slower, but you'll get there. And if things work, then very quickly you'll progress. Because Gokula is the stage of bhava, where you perfect yourself, bring yourself to prema. So when it says you go back to Godhead, it doesn't necessarily mean prema. If you left in prema, then you enter in prema. But if you left not in prema, you won't enter in prema. But you'll get into the spiritual world. But if you thought about your wife, your family, your husband, your money, your this, your that, then you'll come back here. You know, depending on what it is, if you're a strong devotee and all that, but somehow or another that moment you spaced out, then you'll just basically directly take birth in the family of devotees. You know, there was no real material desire to fulfill, just some sense of attachment or duty. So then you'll find a devotee, kid who's very dutiful and always worried about his mother or other members of the family, because that's what he was worried about at the time of death. Right? Or someone very attached, so therefore they're very attached to all the family because they were very attached of the loss of the family at the time of death. So you get that element. So, but if it's more, the material desire is strong, then they will go to the heavenly planets. And after enjoying there, specifically what was the element of their attachment, then they will come back and be born in generally religious families or Brahminical families, those who are followers of the Vedic culture, like that, but not necessarily themselves strong devotees. Does that make sense? So technically speaking, and this still applies even for the West, it just means that there was less piety. Technically speaking, anyone who is born in any kind of aristocratic or noble family, anywhere in the world, they've all performed some agyata sukriti, some devotional service. No one is born in an aristocratic family without having performed devotional service. It doesn't happen. Even their Western and the Lecces, because you find that those who are actually an aristocratic families, there's a culture there that you don't find in the common people. So that's come from previous samskara. Those people who reject Krishna consciousness are Naradhamas. That's the definition of Naradhama. Because it says the lowest of mankind. You can't get lower than a person who's done devotional service and rejected it. That's the lowest. Muha is just a gross, you know, person. Asura has that demoniac. Mayaya Pratigyana, knowledgeable, Maya skull. Naradhama, you all see that the definition is that. It's not emphasized, but that's the meaning. It means they've done. So therefore you'll find much of the time if they're approached properly, the aristocracy is very interested in philosophy and all these higher things and devotional service. But if they're approached wrong, they'll reject. Like that. So it's delicate. So that's probably why we haven't done much preaching in those areas. One, they won't let us in. Two, we end up making a lot of mistakes. We could make a lot of mistakes. You know, like, let's say so like George Harrison, he's a devotee despite us. Because Prabhupada just said, stay away, do your thing. If he had moved into a temple, God only knows what community he'd be in, complaining and bitter and saying all kinds of this and that. So like, we're very careful because we're very careful. We can't handle lack of culture. That's why these elements are important. Birthday is not important. The actual birth, the birth is important. But the celebration of the birthday doesn't actually do anything for the individual as a rite of passage. You know what I'm saying? By the modern methods. What does it do other than make you feel the center of attention? So, I mean, of course, being made to feel the center of attention is an important element of modern culture. But it's not actually an important rite of passage. You know. Sweet 16, you could say, but that's because you become an adult, not because now you become a good-looking kid or girl, and this is it. It doesn't get better than this, right? 17 is already down the hill, so, you know, enjoy it while it lasts. Okay, that's one kind of rite of passage, but not so important. But the second Chudakarna, where the brahmachari commits to a life of brahmacharya, because now he was committed at 5 by his parents, but now at 16 he's an adult, now he commits himself. So at 16 he generally has a bit of a beard, so now he shaves that to as that commitment for that, because now he's committed to that. Otherwise he's going to do sambhartana, which is graduation from education, and he's going to shave for that, but that's shaving now to get married. That's interesting. The baby gets shaved when they're going to get married. Sometimes devotees always grow their hair when they're going to get married. I have to think about that one. Some traditional element to it. You know, means
you wouldn't throw a can of paint in the wall and then, you know, throw some garbage on it and then, you know, put a fell on the floor, roll around in that, ride a bicycle over that. You know, some will call that aesthetics, but it doesn't have any classical principles that it's based on. So it must be based on principles of symmetry, balance of colors. You know, it must be practical. The aesthetics can't be unpractical. They have to be practical. They should also be according to what is auspicious. You know, something like dried flowers are considered inauspicious. You know, but, you know, you're finding every, you know, nice Western hall. So, that's there, you're going to do something. Put real flowers there, put something else there. So, like that, what you use as aesthetics, it shouldn't be against Vedic principles. It should be able to maintain cleanliness, right? Because if your house can be clean, cleanliness is very important to Krishna. So that means it has to be designed like that to be clean. You know, and aesthetics just means that you're putting your attention to everything, you know, even the tap that you get. It should look nice and it should work. You buy a cheap tap, it doesn't look nice, but you'll find it also doesn't work. You know, so that's the things you have to choose. The sink, you get a sink. Sink is for catching water. But I found generally most Western sinks, they do the job of catching water, but another thing they do very expertly is splash. I think I've only met one or two sinks, you know, that, and as long as I can remember, that doesn't splatter. The most fabulous splattering sinks come from Belgium. They're about this big. They're like a huge, they're super fine slope in that. But they're so well designed that a little bit of water drop near the drain will splatter and cover the whole rest of the bowl. Very well designed. I don't know how they did it. But they did it. But, you know, so some are less, so you consider that kind of thing. You know, you consider how you set up your house, is cleanliness there, how many sinks you got, where do you wash the dishes? You know, how are they kept? You know, it's okay, they're kept there nicely, but will that maintain cleanliness? You keep your pots right side up, and then they fill up with dust. You keep them upside down, and then you have to, you know, how will you keep the things? It should look nice, but it should be clean, and it should be practical. So basically, if you combine those things, that it has some classical element of aesthetics and balance, you know, it's practical and it's clean, then probably your house will be very attractive. Then you decide on that, if it's basically on the floor, if it's off the floor, whatever is good for you, you know. You know, and then what can be maintained and clean, you know, like that. So you have to consider all that. So if you consider that, then you're connecting to Krishna. Because Krishna is beautiful, Krishna is balance. So therefore, what is in the house, there should be some balance to it. It should match. Right? Rasa means that what one presents, the other matches it. Right? So therefore, there should be a match between the curtains and the walls and the upholstery. It should match. You know, Krishna is clean. You can't worship him without being clean. The whole process is to purify yourself. So if your house is inherently dirty, how are we Krishna conscious? So if everything in your house you're looking at, does it look nice? Is it somehow or another involved in cleanliness? If it's not, then don't worry about it. It can't be clean. You know? And is it practical? Does it do something? Or is it simply attachment? Okay, I've got 5 million old boxes from perfumes in my house. What's the use? What does it do? You know, so, okay, but if it has a purpose, okay, when I want to give things to others, I'll put it in that box. No, if it doesn't, whatever. And then why should I be giving something to somebody? You know, okay, it's Grihastha, I should give him charity, but why should I put it in a box? A box is nicer than the thing. It's less gross. It's more refined. You know, if it's more than elements, if I just hand them the cash, it doesn't look good. If I put it in an envelope, it's more refined. You know, other people won't know what it is, just like I bring boga for the deities. I cover it. I don't leave it out for everyone to see. Therefore, when I give a gift, it's covered. So then, everything you look at according to the culture. So it should be everything in the house is looked like that. So it's, look, these are light switches. Do they work? Are they clean? Can they be cleaned? Do they match? You know, like that. It's, you know, what is your purpose? What mood do you want to present, project in the house? It should be something that matches your mood. Otherwise, you're not comfortable. You're not comfortable. Then you're not comfortable in your house. You're not going to be comfortable outside your house. Therefore, you're going to be a disturbance to the community at large. So therefore, you're doing a community service by making your house pleasant enough for yourself that you're comfortable. But pleasant from the mode of goodness, not from the mode of ignorance. So therefore, goodness must be there. Goodness means it's balance, there's sense control, there's that, all those different things. Sense control is there. Therefore, you don't have a life-size, blue painting on your wall. Because it may be nice, it's aesthetic, it's one of the masters, it's a copy of one of the great masters, but it's not going to create the Lord of goodness here. It's going to create agitation. So therefore, I won't choose that, because it's not really nicely engaged in Christian service. You know what I'm saying? So, things like this, you consider. I mean, you laugh, but I've seen them on the walls of devotees' houses. I only give examples of what I've seen. Whatever you hear me say, weird other things about people's houses, these are what I've seen. I don't make them up. If it's carnies, then I say it. By default, if I don't say what it is, it's automatically devotees. I didn't say that. Of course, the devotee, his business was selling paintings. And so one of them somehow under the light that they had in the bedroom. So. And their kids are very much interested in the opposite sex. So you see the effect. It has effect. Very much interested. I can't hear you. Is they can still conceive the child, therefore it's the karma to put up with them for the next 20 years. You properly conceive a child, then you have a different experience. So karma doesn't mean something. You have to understand karma is what is the reaction of what you yourself have done. Otherwise you say karma, oh, last life, I don't know what it is, it's just forced upon me, I don't have any free will. No, the parents did not have to conceive a child. They chose to. Right? No child is conceived if the woman doesn't allow it. No ifs, no ands, no buts. If it's a rape, that's another thing. But we're not talking rape here. Children are conceived if the women allow it. Men may be always willing, but women, when they're into it, then it happens. They're not into it, it does not happen. So therefore there is free will there. And then they're inspired because of the movie has created lust. So that means the main attraction is the lust. So that's passion. It's not goodness of creating a Krishna conscious child, inviting a Krishna conscious child. Because if you say, okay, at 10:37 to 11:15 on, you know, Thursday night, you know, 7th of, January 2007, that's a good time to have a child. I guarantee you there's no lust happening. They already know what's going to happen, they're planning for it, the time comes, and it's kind of like, okay, we got this much time. You understand? So therefore that passion, that's the motive. So you're going to get a different result. You're going to get a different result. Therefore it was not planned. Therefore the child will also be spontaneous, won't be able to plan things. Because that's what they were created from. That's why if your child is, according to Garbhodhan, is planned, then you have people that can plan their life. You know, there's a purpose. There's a purpose to the life. There was no purpose. It just happened because when sex happens, you get children. But that wasn't why they were having sex. They were having sex because they were lusting. They got the child. So therefore, this kid has no purpose in life. So nothing that thing has any purpose. They have to create it. So basically, except for Krishna consciousness, they're not going to get it. As a karma, they won't get it. You know? So, and that's the way most people are, and most people don't know. Therefore, so much self-help. You know? People that know, I want to have a child and this, and the family, and so many things like that, or big, you know, business people, the children, and all, you know, carry on the tradition and all that. Those kids are born, they know where they're going. Because they were conceived with that in mind. So that's the whole thing, it's direct. What is the consciousness of the parents directly is the influences the consciousness of the child. So attract that soul. That's free will. It's your free will what you think about. That's why it's practice. So one is not into regulating oneself and controlling oneself. Therefore, one's habit of intimacy is just for pleasure. Therefore, when at the time when it's critical and you want to have children, then you're going to, by habit, click into sensuality. You know what I'm saying? By habit. So that's right. So you're going to have to really work hard to not do that. But if one thinks, no, this is something sacred for children, it's a rite of passage and all this, then it has a more Krishna-conscious sober. One will be more careful and will get a better result. Yeah, then you get two parents. One is Krishna-conscious, one's not. You get a mix. Or there's two kinds of... But one has a Kshatriya nature, one has a Vaishya nature. You get a mix. Because their values of the system, what they're doing about it is different. Their approach to it is different. You know, so then you're going to have a different result. Then you get kids that can't figure out who they are. That's also very common. That's why it says they have to match. Draupadi wouldn't marry Karna because it's not a match. Even though nobody knows it, but even you say he is from a Kshatriya family, he's grown up in a Suta family, so he has a prestige issue. He has issues with prestige. Like that. You know. So that's because he came from a family that was lower. And he wants to make it. So that's why Duryodhana was so dear to him, because he gave him a position. The Pandavas were simply talking on his attitude. He had a bad attitude. You don't walk into, uninvited into a ceremony put on by someone else, make all kinds of claims, not respect the acharyas and the gurus that are there, and then show off your prowess. I mean, what kind of low-class person does that? That is not a kshatriya. understand? So that's the point. Therefore, the Pandavas were dealing with that. They weren't dealing, he's a great, he comes in, he's very noble, and can I take part, or can I show? But what's the need to show? Because this is showing a bunch of kids that graduated from Gurukul what they can do. That's what it was. It wasn't like, you know, here's, you know, Kshatriyas out showing their prowess, and, you know, come one, come all, and let's see who's the biggest Kshatriya. No, but that's the way Karna walked in. He had to prove himself. He has issues. So by association, even though he's born technically a Kshatriya, because the sun god's a Kshatriya, Kunti is a Kshatriya, so there's a match. But because it was outside marriage, it has the fault. And so therefore, then he's dealt and he grew up in that association and he manifests bad quality. Pandavas are talking that. This is not that it'll be explained from, oh, you're a Shudra. Because you're Shudra by mentality. He was Kshatriya by mentality. No one would consider his birth. They don't consider Drona's birth. What's Drona? He was born from a cup. Where's his mother? You know? So it's like, that doesn't matter. But they were talking on his attitude. He was not a Kshatriya by attitude. He may have had the passion and the chivalry, okay. But that need, this is too much. It's wrong. So therefore, Draupadi is of a higher standard. She doesn't want to marry somebody who has such issues like this. Therefore, you tell him no. You know, you're from a sphere, you're from a partner. Arjuna, he's noble. He's somebody she can respect. She is respectable. How should she respect a man who's trying to become respectable? Or prove he's respected. How should respect? A woman doesn't respect, they don't follow. Like that. That's the principle. They don't respect, they don't follow. So that's the Vedic culture, is to make a match that the man is respectable by the woman. And the man respects the woman, therefore he'll take care. So there must be mutual respect. And if there's mutual respect, there'll be mutual attraction. Now we look at, oh, if there's the love. Love is based on attraction. Attraction is based on respect. But respect what? That she wears a size D bra, he respects that? Is that why you marry her? You know what I'm saying? So, how long does that respect last? But here we see with them it's because of qualities. You know? Because of qualities. He's noble, he's this, he's that, she's this, she's that. The beauty comes as a side thing. That beauty that she has comes from pious activities. So therefore someone pious will be attracted. Others simply see their physical beauty. They're attracted by that. So the father has to make sure that only those who are attracted to her beauty because of her qualities are allowed to be chosen for marriage. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay, last point. Then we're going on. Being born in. Unfortunate situations. Yeah. Thank you. Will all our personal shortcomings be overlooked on account of death by Krishna? If that's what they remember, then they have to, Krishna will reciprocate that. If they just remember him, everything else is wiped out because he's the supreme pure. If you remember Krishna at the time of death, doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, it's all removed, because that's perfection. But if you remember something else, something pious or something impious, then that will be what Krishna will reciprocate with, because Krishna is death. So death will reciprocate it, and that you'll get what it is that you were wanting. So that's why so much emphasis is put on the positive process of chanting and remembering Krishna and always absorbing yourself. That's why we're recommending that even like in your house and life and that, you connect that to Krishna. Then you're always thinking of Krishna. Even just where you're going to put something in your house or if you even need it. Because you think of Krishna in relationship with it. You know? So then in that way you'll be accustomed to remembering Krishna. So then, when you have a nice kirtan and all those things, then it's much easier to remember Krishna. Because that's the point. The sincerity is what's important. It's not what you've done, it's the mood in which it's done. But if the mood is right, you should get a good result also. But if you don't, you keep trying to do it because the results are Krishna. So you don't go and say, oh, it doesn't matter because it's that person. Has missed the point. The person is only the result, it's not the attitude. They've missed the point. The point is it's the attitude that should be right, and by a constant endeavor with the right attitude, you should get the right result also. But if it doesn't, that's up to Krishna. At least you're endeavoring to get the right result. Okay. So that's the Bhagavad Gita. Shri Prabhupada Gita.